a seismic voice, a volcanic breath. The roar of a cataclysm broke out in the center of the crowd with a great potential of expansion. José Arcadio II barely had time to pick up the child while the mother with the other one was swallowed up by the crowd that swirled about in panic. Many years later, that child would still tell, in spite of people thinking that he was a crazy old man, how José Arcadio II had lifted him over his head and hauled him, almost in the air, as if floating on the terror of the crowd toward a nearby street. The child's privileged position allowed him to see at that moment that the wild mass was starting to get to the corner and the row of machine guns opened fire. Several voices shouted at the same time, "Get down! Get down!" The people in front had already done so, swept down by the wave of bullets. The survivors, instead of getting down, tried to go back to the small square, and the panic became a dragon's tail as one compact wave ran against another which was moving in the opposite direction, toward the other dragon's tail in the street across the way, where the machine guns were also firing without cease. They were penned in, swirling about in a gigantic whirlwind that little by little was being reduced to its epicenter as the edges were systematically being cut off all around like an onion being peeled by the insatiable and methodical shears of the machine guns. The child saw a woman kneeling with her arms in the shape of a cross in an open space, mysteriously free of the stampede. José Arcadio II put him up there at the moment he fell with his face bathed in blood, before the colossal troop wiped out the empty space, the kneeling woman, the light of the high, drought-stricken sky, and the whorish world where Úrsula Iguarán had sold so many little candy animals. When José Arcadio II came to, he was lying face up in the darkness. He realized that he was riding on an endless and silent train, and that his head was caked with dry blood, and that all his bones ached. He felt an intolerable desire to sleep. Prepared to sleep for many hours, safe from the terror and the horror, he made himself comfortable on the side that pained him less, and only then did he discover that he was lying against dead people. There was no free space in the car except for an aisle in the middle. Several hours must have passed since the massacre, because the corpses had the same temperature as plaster in autumn, and the same consistency of petrified foam that it had, and those who had put them in the car had had time to pile them up in the same way in which they transported bunches of bananas. Trying to flee from the nightmare, José Arcadio II dragged himself from one car to another in the direction in which the train was heading, and in the flashes of light that broke through the wooden slats as they went through sleeping towns, he saw the man corpses, woman corpses, child corpses who would be thrown into the sea like rejected bananas. He recognized only a woman who sold drinks in the square, and Colonel Gavilán, who still held wrapped in his hand the belt with a buckle of Morelia silver with which he had tried to open his way through the panic. When he got to the first car, he jumped into the darkness and lay beside the tracks until the train had passed. It was the longest one he had ever seen, with almost 200 freight cars, and a locomotive at either end, and a third one in the middle. It had no lights, not even the red and green running lights, and it slipped off with a nocturnal and stealthy velocity. On top of the cars, there could be seen the dark shapes of the soldiers with their emplaced machine guns. After midnight, a torrential cloudburst came up. José Arcadio II did not know where it was that he had jumped off, but he knew that by going in the opposite direction to that of the train, he would reach Macondo. After walking for more than 3 hours, soaked to the skin with a terrible headache, he was able to make out the first houses in the light of dawn. Attracted by the smell of coffee, he went into a kitchen where a woman with a child in her arms was leaning over the stove. "Hello," he said, exhausted. "I'm José Arcadio II Buendía." He pronounced his whole name, letter by letter, in order to convince her that he was alive. He was wise in doing so, because the woman had thought that he was an apparition as she saw the dirty, shadowy figure with his head and clothing dirty with blood and touched with the solemnity of death come through the door. She recognized him. She brought him a blanket so that he could wrap himself up while his clothes dried by the fire. She warmed some water to wash his wound, which was only a flesh wound, and she gave him a clean diaper to bandage his head. Then she gave him a mug of coffee without sugar, as she had been told the Buendias drank it, and she spread his clothing out near the fire.